And welcome back. We got snow coming down and it won't melt. Is it plastic? Is it real? Is it some sort of a conspiracy? Hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it. Probably not before we say goodnight, but at some point. Just, you know, keep documenting it, keep collecting it, and, you know, send it into a chemist. Let's find out. Let's get to the bottom of this as soon as we can. Richard Serrett filling in for George Norrie. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, my website, richardserrett.com. And back with more open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, let's just jump right back into the phones and back to the wild card we go. Eric in Alabama. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Welcome aboard. Yes, I can. What have you got for us?
Yeah, the school systems have started sending, as part of the kids' curriculum here, like my son, they have started giving a paperwork telling them how genetically altered food that you buy in the store is better than buying local produce, and telling them it's actually bad to buy from local farmers or buy local produce, and would give them examples on how it would help the economy and was better if they bought genetically altered foods that was from stores.
Little neuro-linguistic programming going on in public school. Interesting.
Exactly.
Well,
brainwash our kids and kind of get them, lean them the way they want them to go.
When it comes to GMOs, I'm not one to, you know, entirely, I'm not going to come down on the side of saying all GMOs are bad because, let's say, for example, you've got a type of rice. And it's deficient in a particular vitamin, and that vitamin is necessary for healthy eyes, for example. And now all of a sudden, you've got people in the third world who are, they're subsisting on this type of rice, and because of the vitamin deficiency, they're going blind. I mean, blindness in young people in the third world and in the developing world is a huge problem. So if you can, for example, genetically modify the rice so that it's got that necessary vitamin, what's wrong with that? And you think, you know, really, how long have we been genetically modifying things? Ever since, you know, you took pollen from one plant, you sprinkled it on another. I remember my father splicing roses, taking one type of rose and splicing it onto another rose plant. Or, I have an uncle, he's got a plum tree. We call it the Jell-O tree because he's got four or five different types of plums on that one tree. Isn't that a form of genetic modification? So I'm not one who's going to say, you know, all GMOs are bad, but these Roundup Ready plants that are just, you know, sucking up as much Roundup as you can throw at it, this to me is troubling.
Well, a lot of the fruits and stuff, like, take for instance a tomato, once they've, you know, genetically altered them, they're actually, the seeds are sterile, so you can't reproduce them yourself at home. And if you take the fruit that you buy in the store, eventually you won't have seeds to where you can grow your own.
I don't know.
You'll be completely lenient on buying it from a store to where you can't produce your own fruit at home.
Yeah, Terminator seeds. Now, I'm not sure that the Terminator seed is actually in existence yet. I know they've talked about it. They've talked about these Terminator seeds, or plants that essentially they're suicide plants, right? They don't produce seeds and germinate again. So you've got to go back and buy your seeds again.
Now we took a lot of vegetables and different stuff and actually tried to raise some of them, you know, plants and stuff off the seeds, and they would not take. And to me, as a farmer myself, local produce is better and actually tastes better than a lot of stuff that you get in the store.
True enough.
I do not agree with them saying do not buy local produce because it's bad for you versus it's giving you 10 better options on or better reasons to buy from a store.
Hey, I'm all about what they call the 100-mile diet, and that's if you can buy everything locally. You know, setting aside the sort of the nutritional value for a moment, and just think about, the amount of fuel that's required to bring if you're here in Toronto and you're flying in hothouse tomatoes from California or what have you, or field-grown tomatoes all the way from California, never mind that they're picked green, they're gassed so that they appear ripe. You cut into one of those and or bite into one of those, it's like biting into cardboard. I tell you, I had a real eye-opener when I was in Greece this past summer, and I felt like I'd tasted a tomato for the very first time in my life. And a lot of it has to do with the soil, too. The soil now is so bereft of any minerals or nutrients that, potatoes and tomatoes and all of these fruits and vegetables are not absorbing any minerals or nutrients from the soil because it's not in the soil. So we keep eating more and more and more, but we're literally starving to death. Eric in Alabama, thanks for the call. Let's say hello to Peter on the wild card line in Maryland. Good morning, Peter.
Hello?
Hi there, Peter. Welcome aboard.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing? I had a question.
Well.
I was wondering if you could help me out with this.
I will try.
What are FEMA camps?
FEMA camps, that's the Federal Emergency Measures Agency. I've probably got that wrong. I know the acronym, but the actual what it stands for, it's something like that, the Federal Emergency Measures Agency. And when there's a natural disaster, some sort of a calamity, like a hurricane or, you know, Hurricane Sandy or an ice storm, FEMA, they get their people on the ground and they're supposed to coordinate sort of relief efforts and rescue efforts and so forth. And these FEMA camps ostensibly are to house people in the case of such an emergency, if, they're without shelter. Now, there is a school of thought that these FEMA camps have been constructed around the country for some other purpose, and that is to hold political dissidents.
Mm-hmm.
This has been long rumored. People have been talking about, these huge, vast expanses of land in places like Colorado with barbed wire and armed guards.
It kind of sounds like concentration camp to me, if you ask me.
It does. It does. So depending on who you believe, they're either there to help us, in the case of a natural disaster, or... is the government expecting some sort of a civil unrest? Is there some sort of event that's looming out there? And they're worried, is it the economy? If the economy craters in a big, big way, something that's going to make the crash of 2008 look like a walk in the park. If that happens, are they expecting, massive civil unrest and they're going to fill the FEMA camps with dissidents?
Yeah, because I saw a video and it says people here and there, some get a red tag, others get a blue tag. Red tag means... they come to your home, they pull you out, they kill you. Blue tag means they have other plans for you. I don't know. I just think people got to look into it, Crazy.
Well, a lot of people are looking into it. And either way, I don't want to end up in a FEMA camp. I don't care if it's, due to a hurricane or civil unrest. I'd rather take my chances out on my own.
I'd rather live in the woods, man.
Eric in Alabama, thank you for the call. All right. Let's see here. Have we talked to Julio in California? Is Julio there? Julio, welcome.
Hey, hello.
Thanks for holding on, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, I've been holding on for more than 40 minutes now.
Well, you made it. You made it. Here we are.
Yeah, I made it, and I feel great. But
what's on your mind?
Okay. Well, my friend was asking earlier. He called earlier, and the he's talking about the Howling Man.
The Howling Man. Oh, this was for Chris Alexander earlier on. Yes.
Yeah, early on, and he got cut off. But he wanted to ask a question about Ambrose Bierce.
Ambrose Pierce. Yeah, you're talking to the wrong guy.
It was the wrong time. Sorry, but he just wanted to ask about that. But I'm here to tell about. It happened at his house, actually. It's pretty,
I can't help you with that, and no one wants to hear me prattle on about things I know nothing of, and unfortunately, Chris Alexander is no longer with us, and he's the guy to talk to. So, sorry, I can't help you with that.
Story, though.
You got something
another
else
story.
For us?
Another, just a word story.
All right.
All right. Because me and him were hanging out one night, and we're just talking, tossing back a few brews, and now all of a sudden I see this guy, like, it was just pop up behind him. I was like, oh, well, like, it's probably someone in the house, you know, he knows. And I asked him later on, I was like, hey, you know what? What's up with that guy? He's all, who? He's like, yeah, that guy is pretty fucking tall, man. He's like,
all right. I think the operative phrase there was tossed back a couple of brews. Let's say hello to Keegan, who's been very patient in Pennsylvania. Keegan? Jonathan in Florida. Jonathan, welcome aboard.
Hey, hello.
Hey. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, what's
welcome
going on?
To Coast to Coast.
Jesus Christ, I thought I was going to pass out. I was on hold for so long, but this show is so juicy, I had to stay. I'm one of the survivors, guys. Whoever's in line, it's worth it. This is a great show today.
Appreciate it. All right, what's on your mind?
Well, I had to say something. We humans need to leave the Illuminati and let Illuminati do what they need to do. From the beginning, Illuminati has had a harder task to keep our humans to live further. That's it's about our species to live further. We can't look at Illuminati as a bunch of or seven guys that's sitting and running the world. If it wasn't for Illuminati to dumbing us down and through medication or through our foods to not get into a higher level, could you imagine if every human being got into a higher conscious? We would be all utilizing mutant powers as walking through walls, levitating and telekinesis and telepathic. Illuminati needs to dumb us down to keep us dumbed down so we won't destroy ourselves. And at the same time, re-engineer UFO crafts and take our DNA to other planets. That's what Illuminati has been doing. That's what it's about, to further our existence. The further us human existence, we on this earth will stay on this earth and die on this earth, while Illuminati go and seed other planets and allow clones, or allow drones, I mean, allow clones, human clones to further. That's what it's about. We're going to stay contained. And the people that's burning the snow, if I was you, I would run away. You guys are in ground zero. You guys are already contaminated with that black snow. Whatever chemtrail chemical that allowed that snow to come down in your town in Atlanta, all over the world, all wherever that the snow is, you guys are contaminated. You guys should know that whatever chemical it is, it's an unknown chemical.
All right, my friend. Listen, if you're the soap salesman for the Illuminati, they don't stand a chance. I appreciate the call. And not exactly a cogent defense for the secretive group of elites that some call the Illuminati. However, thanks for the call. Let's say hello to Gene in Iowa. Hello, Gene.
Hi, Richard.
Welcome.
Good morning. Richard, you know, as people are speaking about the weather manipulation, and I was wondering if you've seen this video on YouTube. It's only a minute and 20 seconds long, and it is of Evelyn D. Rothschild. It's entitled, A Rothschild Speaks, Listen Closely. And he is being interviewed on Bloomberg Station, China and the World from Beijing. And in it, Rothschild says, and I quote, what is going to happen to the weather? And then he says, what might happen to you, all in reference to speaking about the weather and some software he sells.
What is the software about?
Says, excuse me?
What is the software, Gene? What is it?
He sells the weather software. It may be called Weather Central. He's invested in the weather. And then he says, in answer to a question about it, he says, you can find out what is going to happen to the weather. You know, not what's the weather.
It's some sort of a predictive tool. The software is some sort of predictive tool, so we can tell what's in store for the weather. Is that the idea?
Well, no, because that isn't what he says. You know, three times in this very interview, he says, what is going to happen to the weather? And then he says, what might happen to you?
What does he say is going to happen to the weather, and what's going to happen to us? What does he say?
Oh, he doesn't expound on that, Richard. But I think that the key here is that, like in his quote when he says, when Rothschild says, you can find out what is going to happen to the weather, meaning something's going to be done to the weather.
Right. He's just kind of leaving that out there, kind of floating that out there as kind of a veiled threat, I guess.
Well,
I'll check that video out.
Excuse me?
I'll check that out. I say I will definitely check that out, Gene.
Well, I just want to end by saying that they rush him off the air. I mean, this is a minute and 20 seconds, you know, into the interview. They shut him down. He is just dumbfounded. You know, he handles it like the trillionaire gentleman that he supposedly is, cultured person he is. But they shut him down and rush him off the air after he says that.
Yeah, he crossed that invisible line, didn't he? Thank you for the call. Theodore is east of the Rockies in Maryland. Hello, Theodore.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
I'd like to ask you some questions, number one. Correct me if I'm wrong. The Voyager 1 is that satellite that we sent out in 77 that's still traveling through space, am I right?
Voyager?
Yes.
Yes, but I mean, it's been quite a while since they had contact.
Second question. Right. Recently, last in December, they had an article in the paper that said Voyager has passed into interstellar space. Does that mean it's going from our solar system to another solar system with another sun?
Right. Well, if it's interstellar, it would mean that it's no longer in our solar system, right?
So it's not a galaxy, but another solar system. Am I right?
I would tend to believe that. Yeah, they're talking about out of our solar system into another.
Final question.
Right.
How is it being fueled? How is it just traveling on and on? And my fourth question: they recently had signals from that satellite article in the paper. If it sends back signal, it should be sending back pictures. And do you believe NASA is allowing us or holding the pictures of what it's seeing as it's traveling?
I didn't get that last part. Are you asking whether NASA is holding back images it's receiving from Voyager?
The satellite is sending, because another article in the paper said they had actually sent the signal to wake something up, or it had gotten a signal from that satellite. And I was wondering, how is it being fueled to just continue traveling ad infinitum? And number two, is NASA gets signal from it, are they withholding pictures from the public as to what it's seeing? And is it taking pictures as it travels?
Well, you have to get Richard C. Hoagland, I guess, on the program to talk about that. It's hard to say what NASA is up to these days, and it's difficult, you know, to prove a negative. So if you're saying that they've got the images and they're not showing these images to us, how can you prove something like that? As for how Voyager is being propelled through space, I really have no idea. I mean, I'm guessing that it's, you know, no longer sort of operational. It's just hurtling around like space junk at this point. But I'm not aware that, you know, that it's still sending signals back. I could be wrong about that. Nevertheless, Theodore, I appreciate your call from Maryland. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. And we'll continue with open lines in just a few moments. If you've got a call about the snowballs that won't melt, would still love to hear from you on that. And just about anything else that's gnawing in your craw. Back with more. My name is Richard Serrett. You're listening to Coast AM. And welcome back. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, the indefatigable one, the iron horse of broadcasting. George Norrie taking a rare night off, and thank you so much for the opportunity to sit and spend some time with you. We'll be back with more of your calls on open lines as we continue Coast to Coast AM right on through till morning. Sarah's sitting in for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll continue along with our open lines here. Just received an email, and vis-a-vis the snowballs that won't melt, and someone is suggesting here that if you go to Snopes.com, they apparently have a video and an explanation for this. Now, I've not had an opportunity to check it out. Rest assured I will once we dim the lights here and head on home. But if you have a chance, check it out at www.snopes.com/politics/conspiracy/flakesnow.asp. And I don't know if they're going to debunk it or whether they have some, you know, rational explanation for why snow won't melt when you hold a lighter up to it. I definitely am interested in checking that out. All right, let's say hello to Allison in Maine. Hello, Allison.
Well, hi.
Good morning.
Hi. I know you're a conspiracy buff about Kennedy, especially, and things. And I just, you know, I'm kind of a skeptic. You know, years ago when I saw all the films, like Rush to Judgment and all that, and read some books and all of that. And but I've been reading, Norman Mailer's Oswald's Tale. And let me see, of course, Jared Posner's Case Closed. And then I read the very short version of Vince Bugliosi's book, Reclaiming History, which is called 4 Days in November. And I just don't quite see, you know, Dorothy Sayers, the great mystery writer, one of her first novels was called Clouds of Witness, because there's a death, and there's a really simple explanation to why the death occurred. But everybody comes up with all these betray theories about why it did. And and I kind of feel that's what's happening with so many things in history. And I just find that, I don't know, it's kind of disrespectful to the presidency, to President Kennedy, to history in a way, to come up with all these crazy, outlandish theories. Oh, I shouldn't use the word crazy, but some of them, it just seems, sometimes history and things can turn on a dime and things can be very simple. And it seems, I don't know, just seems like a lot of mythology has been created with very little evidence, a lot of contradictory mythology. So,
well, there's a lot of chaff out there, and it's always a Herculean task to try to separate the wheat from the chaff. Mm-hmm. But let me say this about, you know, whether or not it's being disrespectful to President Kennedy's memory, and I would strongly disagree. I don't think, you know, searching for the truth is ever anything but, you know, doing a service to the memory of Kennedy or anyone else who's a victim of a crime. You know, the truth needs no explanation. The search for truth needs no explanation. And if you end up going down a road and it ends up being a dead end, so be it. You back up down that that street and you try another route. You keep pulling on threads. As long as there are loose threads, you know, there's no need to apologize for searching for the truth. But here's what I look at frames. Is it 312, 313, 314? Look at those frames in a nutshell. I mean, you superimpose over that, as we see Kennedy's head, you know, moving violently backwards, and superimpose over that the analysis of a then relatively unknown reporter, Dan Rather, commenting that here we see Kennedy's head moving violently forward. I mean, that to me speaks volumes. I don't know how you get around frames 313 and 314.
Physics is a very strange thing, but I was just thinking, like, the fact that this is, we're getting too esoteric for the general listeners, but the fact that the attacks on General Walker, Edwin Walker, months before with the same rifle that was used to kill Kennedy, to a right-wing, politician, retired general, and just things like that, and just the fact that, I've been at a book depository, I'm no Marxwoman or anything, but it doesn't seem that impossible to me. He had been trained, he was in the Marines, he had been trained to shoot. The car was going incredibly slowly, and it just, I don't know. I mean, have you read some of the other books, like these skeptical books? Have you? I have,
yeah. And I find that a lot of them are just a rehashing of some of the same old arguments. And okay, so there could have been a shooter in the sixth floor of the Texas Book Depository building. That doesn't mean that there weren't other shooters, whether it was the grassy knoll or some other place. People often throw up Occam's razor. It's the simplest explanation. Well, to me, the most simple explanation is that there was more than one shooter. And let's start from there. And that was what the Subcommittee on Assassinations back in the late 70s, that was their finding. And let's not forget that the Warren Commission, that was not a unanimous decision. There were dissenters who did not buy into that version.
But don't you think if there had been a trial and things, that there wouldn't be so much stuff about, you know, so many theories and everything, if there had been a trial and conviction? Maybe not, because people think...
Had Oswald lived. Yeah, well, isn't that always interesting? There's rarely a trial. That's the problem.
Why is
there never a trial? Because the shooters... or supposed shooters are so conveniently moved out of the way. Allison, I appreciate the call.
There's a lot of conspiracy theories about even that, and he's still alive, unfortunately. Sir Hans, Sir Hans. So,
yeah.
I read the Norman Mailer book because it's fascinating. He had to extrapolate a bit from, you know, what information.
I've not read Mailer's book. I've not read Mailer's book, but I know William Pepper a little bit, who was Sir Hans, Sir Hans' lawyer, and William Pepper was also the one that led that civil trial in Memphis, Tennessee, which essentially exonerated his client, who had since died, James Earl Ray. You listen to William Pepper talk about Sirhan Sirhan. I mean, many, many questions that arise there. He had a pistol that was a 7-shooter, and yet there were something like 12 bullets fired that night at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. A lot of questions with Sirhan Sirhan. We haven't even begun to scratch the surface in terms of the truth there, I don't believe. Allison, always great to hear from the great state of Maine. Thank you for that. And now we'll go to the international line and say hello to Bill in Canada. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that was an interesting conversation. Boy, I'd like to go on a date with Allison.
She seems to know her JFK stuff. Absolutely.
My God, like, that's just amazing. I have a question and then a statement. First, about I did the snowball thing this morning out in Pickering, eh?
Ah, the plot thickens. Yes,
it didn't like quite melt, but it kind of reduced its size, but it did leave like the burn mark from the lighter, right? So, but I have a statement about chemtrails.
All right.
My theory, I think it's some kind of like moisture for conductivity for all the GPSs and everything because of our, like how they, like with all the connections around the world with all the microwaves and that, I think because moisture, water is the best conductor. But I had a question for you about Mars and the probes and that. How come we never hear sound? Why is it always visual? And still photographs. We never get a video, and never ever have. And maybe I haven't, but ever heard a recording of the sound that comes from Mars.
Well, you're talking about a planet that has no atmosphere, so it's the vacuum of space. So what I would assume that it's pretty difficult, to record. It's like the old tree in the forest. If it falls and nobody's there, does it make a sound? I don't think there's anything to record in the vacuum of space.
No, I mean from the surface of Mars. Like with all their windstorms and little dust devils,
something has
to be produced.
Right, right. Good question. And again, I would wish that Richard C. Hoagland were here to help me.
Yeah. No, but has anybody ever posed that, or have you ever we hear like the sound? Of the surface of Mars.
That's a great question. I've not actually even thought about that before. And again, a tribute to our coast listeners.
Are you going
to
think about it now?
Are you kidding me? All the way home, all the way up the 404 up to Thornhill.
Wow.
Thanks for that.
Okay. Well,
it'll keep me up once I get home.
What station is your TV show on in Toronto here on Rogers?
It's a Vision Television across Canada. Thank you for asking.
So that would be cable 9 here. And what time is it?
It's season 1 and 2 are in repeats all over. They're playing it all over the place.
So. Guide and I'll punch in the conspiracy show, and then it should come up on Vision.
Check your local listings, as they say.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Bill. Appreciate it.
Go Leafs, go.
Yes. Nice plug there for our Toronto Maple Leafs. Tom is in Oklahoma. Welcome, Tom.
Hi, how you doing, Richard?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
Great. Hey, I was going to ask you about, if you leave me alone with somebody for about 20 minutes or so, if I get the opportunity, I'll try to talk with them a little bit to kind of open their understanding up a little bit more. I like to think about people as asleep or awake. Awake meaning that they're like, understand a little bit about what's going on with the media influences and what's the function in the government and stuff like that. And you know, most of the time when I talk to somebody, I'll watch a light come on to where they're actually getting it. I'll hit them with simple things that they can understand, and I'll see them, like, they can get the picture. They'll see it, and I'll see it that they've got it.
Well, give me a for instance, Tom. What sorts of conversations are you having with these people? Give me a for instance.
No, yeah, it's really hard to just pull up out of the blue. Usually about media influence. It's kind of like the way that the government always has the wolf at the door, uses scare tactics, comes through our, you know, our movies and a lot of the media sources, and the way that they'll cover stories that are convenient for them and brush away ones that aren't, and, you know, try to get them into a little bit, maybe talk to them a little bit about the New World Order, kind of rolling back to the first Bush and kind of through there. You know, nothing real heavy, nothing like real spiritual or anything, just real basic stuff that you can go through
right.
your memory a little bit and understand.
And how is that message received by and large?
You know, usually it's received pretty well. I mean, I'm pretty good at getting it done. I mean, I've managed to wake up my wife and my brother-in-law. They're like fully alert now, like most of our listeners on this show here. I mean, they understand that there's a lot going on behind the scenes. But generally, if I just talk to somebody, a random person, I'll watch them, and they'll come alert for a little bit, and then I will just watch them like they just voluntarily just turn it off, like they voluntarily go back into their daydream. You know, I was kind of wondering if you've ever experienced that, or maybe I could take a different approach, or
well. Yeah, you got to be careful when what you're really doing in some cases is pulling their reality out from under them, and that can be devastating. You're deconstructing their reality, and some people just aren't equipped for that. They're not ready for it, and if you got to go slow. You got to be gentle, and it's almost like a survival mechanism, I think, that kicks in with people. You know, they don't want to, they can't go any further. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to see it. They don't want to touch it. And they're going to run. They're going to flee. It's, you know, flight or fright and flight or whatever they call that. It's just, or fight or flight, rather. You cannot deconstruct someone's reality if they're not willing to go there. And they will resist with every fiber of their being. And what I've done is because, you know, this is, I'm immersed in this kind of information all the time. Just as my own defense mechanism, I compartmentalize my life. So, you know, when I'm wheeling down the cereal aisle at the local Safeway or Loblaws up here in Canada, there's a plug. Will I get free groceries? I think not. I don't engage people on that level. I learned a long time ago, you can get yourself stricken from a lot of Christmas card lists, you know, if you start going there with a lot of people. So if they come to me and they're open and they want to know about what I think about the concentration of media ship or media ownership, or if they want to know what I think about, you know, what's going on in the Bilderberg meetings, or then I will offer up some opinions. But I don't go looking for it. I don't go seeking people out. It's kind of a soft sell, I guess.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know. It's just something about me that I just want to get them awake enough so that they have to deal with the reality of it, because I'm really concerned about, you know, my country and my children and, you know, our future. I don't know. I had that talk with my wife the other night. I told her sometimes I wish she didn't know, and she agreed with me. But then again, she said, "What would you rather that I didn't?" So. I enjoyed this show a lot because it's confirmed a lot of things that I had been aware of for a long time, but I've never heard anybody talk about it.
Yeah, sometimes we need to get together as a group and just verbalize these things, and it's kind of an affirmation. There was an interesting Washington Post article that came out. It was kind of a year-ender, a year-in-review for 2013, and the article was entitled, 2013, the Year That Proved Your Paranoid Friends Right. Tom, listen, I appreciate the call.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good evening.
Tom from the Sooner State. Let's check in with Ed in Iowa. Hello, Ed. Welcome to the Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being on Stellar Show tonight. You're doing the show proud.
Much appreciated.
I've been dialing for an hour. So I just had a little something that I thought of when you're talking about chemtrails. I had a buddy of mine who used to work in a, well, he was in the Air Force, and he was a mechanic. I'm not sure if he was a flight mechanic or not, but when planes would come back from dropping Agent Orange in Vietnam, it was his job to scrub down the planes and get that stuff off the outside of the planes.
Sure.
He's in pretty bad health now, but if you transport that to now, these planes that are doing the chemtrails, there's got to be someone that's working in the same capacity, you know, scrubbing this stuff off what residue is left on these planes.
Right,
we
yeah.
Those people to stand up and speak out.
Exactly. Yeah. Where are the whistleblowers when it comes to this geoengineering? Where are the pilots of these, whether they're military transport planes or whatever type of aircraft is being used? Where are the people that are loading these containers onto the back of the transport plane?
Right.
That's handling these aluminum particulates and
plane.
Exactly.
And,
yes.
And I've witnessed, you know, one going west and two coming east. And they act just like they're on a strafing run. After the trails stop, they just zoom straight up, and they're out of sight immediately.
All right, Ed. Well, listen, I know you waited a while, but you were like Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. You got to close the show. So thanks for hanging in. Thanks for your call. Thanks for all of your voices and all of your ears. Greatly appreciate it. My thanks to George Norrie, Lisa Lyon, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Lex Lonehood, Tricia Pep, and here in Toronto, thanks to Dave Spargala, Scott Guest, and of course, Gord Harris. And again, thank you. Good morning. God bless.